try not to fidget as much today. I don't know. I watch myself on this. It's like I got fucking Tourette's.
Yeah, I just try not to pay attention to anything I do. Otherwise, I can't sleep.
I just like, I'm sitting here listening, talking to you, and this is like me.
Yep.
Hey, look, it's going in circles.
All right, welcome back to episode 22 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. This is Kelly Gallup.
Cleaning up and fidgeting is also always.
Always. Today's show is brought to you by Squala Puffy Pants. I happen to be wearing them right now. I wear them under my waders until it hits about 50 degrees.
Johnny lives in those things.
They are the best. Yeah, Jake and Chuck, if you ever see them, they're wearing them.
They wear them in the summer.
Yeah, they do. Jake, I don't know, Jake gets cold, I think. So yeah, check them out on our website, slidein.com. They're great. I really dig them. And I think they're great, too, if you snowboard, you can wear them under pants.
We don't want to hear about it if you're a snowboarder. We do not want to hear about it.
Yeah, don't tell us. All right. So today we've got a whole bunch of good stuff we want to talk about. I wanted to start with a question from MC Bauer 1961 on YouTube. He said, now that you shared your thought on floating and sinking lines, can you explain the design of the Streamer X rod and why this rod is different from any other so-called streamer rods on the market? What are you looking for in a streamer rod? Love the podcast. I try to listen to all of them. Thanks. Now, I do want to add in a comment from President...
Was this that guy? Yeah.
President Doge guy. He says, in response to MC Bauer, it's mostly marketing. Well, I'm sure the Streamer X rod is great. Won't give you any major advantage over any other rod in its weight class. Remember, a rod is simply a rod. These guys get paid to sell stuff, and to do so, they come out with new stuff, blah, blah, blah. Basically, goes on to say he likes Kelly, but understands that he does a lot of marketing and that any rod works as a streamer rod. So, given all that, let's talk.
Well, Doge is full of shit. Just right there. You are full of shit. Not every other rod. Most six weights are designed to be dry fly rods. And you're right, though. We do market, and we do have to come out with new stuff. It'd be pretty goddamn boring if we didn't. We'd still be using cane. Or actually, we could go back before that. So you were wrong. Put a lot of emphasis in that. totally wrong. Totally wrong. It wasn't pick some fucking rod off a shelf and say put a name on it. People do that. I didn't. And because of where the streamer game came from, and you're right, if 61's your birthday, you're 2 years younger than I am, and you're right, from our generation, we did do the same rod always for everything. Shit, I had a six weight when I started that I fished salmon with, trout with, steelhead out in that, put a spinning reel on it, take it out, steelhead fishing off the shore. We didn't have 5, 10 rods, 100 rods, wherever we got. But to tell you how it went down, first of all, if you know anything about rod design, which I'm now thinking, and I appreciate that we're friendly and all that, and this is all kind of tongue-in-cheek, but they were not like that in the old days. You built rod series. There was no emphasis on sinking line or bigger flies, and that was the problem with the six weights. They were too soft where they didn't need to be. So when I designed the first rod ever in history for something specific was the bank robber. And shortly thereafter, I did a whole series called the High Stick Drifters, which were 10-foot rods that were designed to indicator fish with, because we hadn't addressed indicators because we didn't use those things in the old days. So that's another point that is not true, that what Doge said. But what I did was I took with St. Croix, we did the bank robber, knowing that our flies were, now when we wrote the first book, flies were still a huge fly. I mean, when people saw the Zoo Cougar, they would say, which is weightless, complete, I mean, shit, that's almost a dry fly. It was, they're like on a size 2 though. And people thought they were musky flies or tarpon flies. Like, well, I probably didn't think musky because we didn't fish muskies back then. But any rate, we were running basically 200 grain lines. All lines were pretty much the same. And we did that line with Cortland through Jim Teeny and I. And so But we had no rod, so we would have to find like a 7 or an 8 weight. And by those standards, 8 weights were about 6.5, 7s by today. Because we started, the rod company started lying about their weights, which is now they're all, it's kind of like politicians. They're all getting caught in their lie, right? So now the rods are coming back. You notice that Sage just got softer rods instead of those ridiculously fast, shitty things.
Yeah, they just came out with the Arctic Classic, right?
It was just it just started a litany of lies. All the line companies were lying about the weight of their lines. Well, shit, anybody, we all got a grain scale in your house somewhere. I mean, a bunch of drug addicts. They weigh the damn thing. A 6 weight was a 6 weight, 160, what, 165, whatever it is. You know, your grainage was your grainage. And suddenly you're weighing your 5 weight line or your 6 weight line and it's 2.5 lines over. Well, that's because the rod company started lying about their weights. Yeah. And so blah, blah, blah. But just because it says 7 or whatever, so back to the original thing, way to get me going in the morning. you go back to the original, and the original rod, the bank robber. And what I did, and it took a long time back then, because you got their four-piece rods. Just like when Carrie had me do, Johnny and I do the Berkheimer rods. We got 3 rods, which is 12 pieces. And you would get, so you would have 4 pieces, everyone's marked. And then you had 3 other pieces, or two butt sections, 3 twos, 3 threes, and 3 fours sections. So you'd put this thing together, and they're not finished, right? They're just guides are taped on. And you put this thing together, string the frickin' line through it, go out and cast it. No, it's not quite. I want it to be a little softer. Then you pull the take the frickin' line off, put the third section in, put the fourth section in, go out and you're kind of trying to take notes on this.
Right.
Well, about the fourth or fifth time you go through that sumbitch, your brain scrambled eggs. You got nothing. You're like, was it the fifth one that, well, what if I did this? It was a pain in the ass. Right? And the same thing with bank robber, the earlier one. And so I started with 3 different weight rods. So I'd have I knew I wanted a, and by the way, there's a method to designing a streamer rod. And it's not just fucking advertising and doing that. The idea for me personally, and here's a little taste of honey. It is my rod. So I put exactly what I wanted in the son of a bitch. I did not make it to market it. If it didn't work, the son of a bitch wasn't going to sell. I get paid by the rod. So that part you're right on. I do market, and just like my flies, if my flies suck, I don't get paid because nobody buys the damn things, right? So anyway, I take the rod. I know, and here's the 3 elements to a streamer rod. 4, I don't like fighting butts. So I didn't want a fighting butt on my rods, but I reluctantly did it on some of them because most people do. And so I take the rod and I want a very fast butt section. And for those of you who don't know, there's componentry to the rod that makes it do something. A stiff rod's a shitty streamer rod. It shouldn't be stiff. You should have 3 elements to that rod. One of them is casting, obviously, but you have to set the hook and fight your fish. If the guys from Muskie Fool, they've roasted my ass on the 100-inch. That was so cool. I listened to the whole podcast. I can't wait to go re-listen to it. These guys are really sharp, right? And they get, because they run giant flies, they're going through, they're talking, they're roasting flies. It was really cool. If you haven't, I think it's from Muskie Fool, but I'm going to find out before you do, because I want you to go to this, because it was really interesting to listen to this. Because they're talking about how they diversify their rods for their flies and their lines like we should. But we're trout guys are kind of dumb it down, right? It's a 6 weight. It should work. Well, that's not true. Every rod's made to do something. So this rod was designed first and foremost to have a fast butt section. And it really goes into, there's 4 pieces. So it goes halfway up into the second piece. And so you got a butt section that's designed to set the hook and fight your fish. You don't fight your fish off the tip of your rod. You put the bend into your ass end. If you knew anything about salt water, watch Andy Mill fight a tarpon. does it better than anybody in the world. Doesn't do it with his hand out here like that. You have to know how to flex the freaking rod. What did Andy tell you when you asked him, how did you achieve that? What did he do? He learned to fight, what was 125 pounds.
He set up a rig in his garage to learn to pull exactly 12 pounds.
12 pounds.
So he'd break the fish's mind instead of its body, right? So and the other thing he says is, to your point, you don't even fight with your arms. What are the strongest muscles in your body? It's your hammies and your ass, right?
Yeah, you're in
it. So he's got that rod down here, and he's pulling on it with his legs.
Exactly.
And his rod is almost straight.
Exactly.
He's pulling with the heaviest part of the rod, not the tip.
That's why we put the butt section where the butt section is. Yeah. So that's the first piece of the design. The second piece is the tip for me, because I need to, I'm not a rope puller. I do not do that. It's very, very seldom that I do that. And when I do pull the rope, it's frequently with a lighter rod and lighter flies and a Carolina rig, or just particularly with Carolina, I can pop it because the fly's darting, right? And I'm kind of doing suspension flies, you know, or glide flies, if you will, where they back and forth, and I'm just getting them to twitch and get caught in the currents. So I don't need to do as much animation. 95% of my fishing, I am animating the fly. As we've heard, I've talked 1,000 times that rope pulling is it's a one trick pony. If you can't stall a fly, and if you can't glide one and make it do this, you're really just leaving a lot of fish there, right? I need to animate my fly with the tip. Now that goes into section three, halfway up three and four. That has to be fast to animate that thing like that. And the difference between my rods and the rest of them is that I don't build stiffness in the middle of the frickin' rod. That's where you were wrong completely. Because all these shit rods out there, they could be 10,000. I don't give a shit. Some guy, most of these designers have never fished a streamer in their life. But yet they'll tell you, great streamer rod. Really? Who said so? I didn't say so. Russ Madden didn't say so. Johnny didn't say so. Alex Lufkus didn't say so. Maybe they thought it was shit. Why? Oh, because they actually fished the damn things. So I wanted a rod. When you take a sinking line, it's defying gravity quicker than a floating line. And a rod that's stiff tightens your loop.
Well, hey. And our shop's open today, so we're going to pause real quick. Help this guy out. We'll be back.
I'm still pissed. Tighten the loop.
All right. Well, we just had a couple fellas come in the shop, so we had to help them out. We are shooting during a day where we are open, which...
It's freezing out. Yes. We were absolutely killed it yesterday. We did the big hole, crushed a dry fly day with Johnny.
We were filming, so that'll come out eventually.
Oh, yeah, it's cool. It was such a great show. But we're t-shirting it, or not much of the morning t-shirt yesterday. Today, worst day I've ever drove here. Hour and 15 minutes to drive 40 miles. And it was black ice, it's howling. I didn't think anybody would be fishing today, but they are.
Yeah,
so where was I on my rant?
I'll throw a photo. I got a photo of the first couple guys that were in here. Kelly tied a fly up for them. It was kind of cool. I think they appreciated it. I know they were listening to the podcast, so hopefully you guys are watching it now. Can't remember any of your names, but they're nice dudes from Utah. All right, so where were we? Kelly was all...
pissing and moaning
about. Yeah, hot and bothered about President Doge guy's comment, which I do want to admit, I do want to read the end of this. He said, I like these videos, and I think Kelly is a good dude, but at the end of the day, a lot of it is marketing. So
there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, I think in his defense, there is some outrageous marketing in our industry. I don't think that this is an example of it.
Yeah, when you go into like niche rods and you're doing something specific, like you could say that sinking lines were marketing.
Yes.
But it's not true. It's
it's like Johnny was talking about yesterday. We always make jokes about the ad campaign that went out for the Orvis Helios saying that it's 30% more accurate.
Yeah.
That's marketing bullshit. That's marketing.
Oh, and back to my previous rant, Yeti. You can drop it off the back of a truck and it'll still be good. Well, how about the food? It's such a crock of shit. Yeah, marketing's marketing. But when you go into the, how about skis? I mean, shit. Every year there's a new ski, right? Did it really, whatever.
It's every few years there's a quantum leap, but yes.
Yeah. But it's
a new top sheet or whatever. Yeah, golf clubs, same thing. I mean,
cars, whatever. we have a earthquake, or is that the dog moved that? But anyway, back to this rant that I was on, which I was almost done with. So I was saying about how in the midsection, you do not want a fast midsection on a sinking line rod. And so it needs to flex, and it needs to be pretty close to true flex in the center. The butt fights the fish and sets the hook. The tip animates the fly. And when you cast that, I was saying that when you have a rod that's just stiff, it compresses your loops, you know, great for distance, for dry lines. Not so good with a 6-inch fly you're going to wear in the back of your freaking head. It's going to come right this way, because when you come back, if everything isn't right, that fly is weighted for the most part, or at least heavy. It's dropping. If you aren't really clean with that, it hits the end, which is a tailing loop. It goes down below, and then it accelerates from the bottom coming up at you. And it's defying gravity. They're heavier. Everything's heavier. So you don't build this really tight spot in it. You want it to open up a little bit so the loop's bigger. And so it took me 6 months to get the rod that I liked. Now, I will tell you this. Second iteration of that designed rod, when I did the Streamer X, I sent my bank robber to them, and I wanted one little tweak on it. But we can put it on this machine now and get it so close, so quick. None of that 10 pieces trying to put it together. I mean, it's a completely different process now, and it is faster. But there is a difference between, if there's no difference, if you can use any, then why would you buy any freaking rod on earth? If that is such a stupid statement, because that means that any 6-weight's the same as every 6-weight.
I think what he's saying more so is that you can get away with it.
And you can get away with anything.
I remember seeing a video on Instagram the other day of some guy saying, you know, there's a lot of specialized equipment for streamer fishing. Really, all you need is the right line to carry the fly. And I think to get in the game, that's true. Now, if you want to do it the right way, I mean, I went from fishing, you know, slower sixes at fish fiberglass sixes.
Sage, which is a dry fly rod, right. Is not going to, which is what we had in the old days. Yeah. That's not true. We used RPLs in the beginning, and an RPL 6 was a true to weight 6-weight, and a 200 really pushed it around. Mm. And they came out with the RPL Plus, which was just an absolute horse beating, you know, buggy whip. This is a worthless thing. It was so fast, right? But we loved it because it would pick up our line.
Right.
And whereas the traditional 6 was just not. So I kind of agree with him in the fact that you could buy any moderately fast 6-weight, and yeah, you could get away with it. Right. It's kind of like
you're
say
you're
about
in the game.
You're in the game. But how far you're in the game, do you want to go to a 250? Now you're toast, right? And so
I mean, it's like the difference between a one rod quiver and a purpose built.
And that's the difference.
Rod,
it was a purpose built. We didn't just take a 6-weight and say this is a streamer rod.
Yeah.
Right? We didn't do that. We put a lot of time. And then conversely, by the way, to that, when we did Berkheimer rods, when Johnny and I designed those rods, they are completely different. They are completely different. And I mean, the flex zones are really a lot closer to what would be considered a fast dry fly rod nowadays. And so they're completely different flexes for a different style of fishing. I've told this story many times, is that we have streamer schools every fall. We do 4 of them. Last 2 weekends in September, first 2 weekends in October. My head guide for a long time, Steve Mock, hated my rods. Absolutely hated them. And he loved the Berkheimer, right? Different styles. So that's another thing you got to look at, is if your style is the same as mine or Johnny's or yours. And so skinny is as fishy as a human gets, right? He's as good a caster as you can get, as fishy as a human can get, and absolutely hated the bank robber, which was the original. And would tell all my guests that. But I tell everybody, I don't make my guides do anything. I mean, there's different rods. So I guess in one respect, he's right that you could get away with a little faster, like if we're talking six weights. And again, six weights are really kind of, that's my walking rod. That's my dry line rod. Not so much a sinking rod, sinking line rod. So in one respect, that's true too. So there's some validity to it.
You know, Jake,
but they were not just randomly picked off. And
no, there's a lot of effort that went in. You can feel it when you throw them too. I mean, they fish different than your kind of more general rods.
Yeah.
You know, after we filmed down on the Henry's Fork with Jake, we took your boat out again the next day, mm-hmm. right? And we were just raving about the six weight and how well that 200 Cortland carried the bigger flies.
Yeah.
I was really impressed by it. I'd never thrown the six-weight stream racks. I'm more of a seven-weight
guy. And the reality of it is the first rod, those two, that were truly designed. The rest of the world was building rods and saying, yeah, that's a...
You're saying the high-stick drifter and the bank rubber.
Yeah, but I mean, in reality, I'm just talking about the streamer rods.
Oh, gotcha.
Well, the others were niche also. They were different. And if you look at in the history, here's all you have to realize is you build a rod, you don't start with 10 rods. You don't build 10 prototype rods. You build a 9 foot five weight. And in case you don't know, this is how it rolls. It's very expensive to build a prototype, to build a mandrel, to have the mandrels built and then go in. You build a 9 foot five weight. And then you extrapolate mathematically off to all the other ones. That's why there's a sweet spot in every rod, right? Every line of rods. They don't get, imagine how hard it would be. And if you have to change the mandrel, not just the flags, and all the things that go into it. But if you had to change the mandrel, it would be so costly. You think $1,000 rod's expensive? It'd be $5,000. You build a 9 foot five weight, and then you extrapolate it in both directions, bigger, smaller, up and down. And you call them this. And that's the dirty little secret.
Yeah.
Nobody's just building these, right? And so you get this sweet spot. Well, it might not be that six weight streamer rod. And if you built the whole series in the old days, like when Sage started, it was, I talk about Sage so much because I've been involved with them, you know, most of my life. And I used to work for them, but you had one guy designing rods who was not really a trout guy, more spayish. And he, you know, great designer, but really not hip to what we did. And so, nor could you have someone, you'd have to have a specialist in every single zone, right? And so, but you started out with a series of rods, which is the RPL, well, the RP to start with. And then the RPL comes out, workhorse. And that, it was kind of it. And we didn't have a new rod every year. And that started, I think it was the year I left when they decided to go discontinue a rod every other year or something like that and bring out a new rod because people were buying rods just because of ego, not because of function. Mm-hmm. And so, but they never really had niche specific rods, right? And if you think about it, they had one or two, one was the dumbest thing ever, zero weight. What the fuck is that? But I mean, for the most part, that's how companies ran. They weren't into this continuous change. And that, by the way, is marketing.
That is marketing.
That was total bullshit when that happened. Discontinue a rod, which was perfectly like, you know, and then come out with a new rod every other year just so that you would have something new. I agree. That's total bullshit because I fell from grace with that company because the rods just got so damn stiff. I didn't like them anymore. And the same with most of them, frankly. I think that's part of the reason I started going to those kit rods is that they weren't stupid fast. You know?
Like the Traverse kit.
Yeah.
I mean,
Cortland kit I fished yesterday. I love that thing, that six weight.
Yeah.
That thing was money.
True to weight.
Yeah. True to weight. Everything was good. But to say that it's all marketing, I'll give them credit. A lot of it is marketing. I mean, you just look around. In some regards, it is the Yeti Nation. I mean, how important is the freaking cooler, right? Evidently, the most important thing in the freaking world. And so you can let it off the back of your fucking four-wheeler and you're happy. You're just dumb.
It does blow my mind seeing like the assortments. I was in a gas station in Dillon the other day, and they must have, I don't know, $150,000 worth of Yeti stuff sitting there by the nation. Door. Yeah.
And that's, and you know, you're a fly fishing rod company. You got to do something. But my rods were not that. And if you, here's another thing to understand. My rods have never changed.
Right.
Right. My rods, when we did it, if it was all marketing, we would have changed something every year.
Every year.
But right. we didn't.
The Streamer X 0.2.
The Streamer X, which is, you know, after St. Croix quit making high-end rods, we had to have something. Right. And so I didn't have to change the bank robber because it did what I wanted it to do, which doesn't mean like skinny Steve, he didn't like it. Well, he had to go to something else, right? But I didn't change it so skinny would like it. I made it 100%. And that's the thing when you're in my position as, you know, designer, whatever, you do what you think's right. And you're not I'm not trying to appease everybody. I'm not trying to appease anybody but me, because it's what you're paying for what I like in a rod. You look at any rod in the bass, musky, the fly guys, the musky fly guys, they all have such specific tastes. And, you know, that's what, you're not hiring somebody to do a blanket to throw out there. You're saying, what does, you know, this guy want? What does Chris Willem want for his rod? What does Kelly Gallup or Russ Madden want for his rod? That's what you're doing.
Right.
And so, and like I said, if it was marketing, I would have changed the son of a bitch three times since it came out.
Right.
But it's never changed. And it never will until, I don't really see it changing, because we're settling in, you know, all businesses, or not business, but all sports, you'll settle in on, like in golf, until a ball changes completely and it needs some other way to strike it, the ball's the ball, right? Well, they all change, I suppose, a little. But it's not enough to make me, if we're all settling at 5.5, 6-inch flies are going to be the max, and we're all throwing, you know, we're not hovering yet. We don't get to hover over the river in our little whatever we're going to hover in 10 years. And we're still throwing it, and we don't have 4-inch imaging, and we don't do this and that. If we're still just fishing, we don't need to change it.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of companies change cosmetics on their rods and don't change a thing. Well, that's another little secret about rod companies. They don't make new mandrels all the time. They change the freaking paint job on that son of a bitch. They might change the flag, is what the graphite that gets wrapped around it. You might change that a little bit. That changes the rod, I'll give you that. But you aren't going to go through and change all those mandrels. They are, I think they're like $10,000 a piece for a mandrel. And so you're not going to change those out. You're going to do marketing changes.
Right. It's like when...
And the rod will change, but it's maybe not for the better.
Yeah. I don't want to keep ripping on Orvis because I don't really know that much about the rods. But when they came out with the black edition Helios, where instead of the white thing, it was black. I don't know. Maybe the rod was different. Changed. Marketing. I don't know. I didn't look into it that much.
Well,
I just decided to
make
uninformed comments. Okay, you think we covered that one pretty well?
I don't know.
Maybe. Let us know what you think. We do appreciate the comments from both you guys, too. If it was all agreeing, then we wouldn't have a lot to talk about. So thank you, President Doge Guy, even though you kind of took a little heat there.
He didn't take any heat. I just got...
Yeah, no, you just got a little angry.
angry at him.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the comment. And yeah, there is a lot of bullshit marketing in all industries, so... It's tough to weed through, you know, what you're being sold and what you are.
Imagine Nike, how much one of those shoes has changed in 20 years.
Well,
probably not.
So I used to work at Finish Line Sports when I was in high school at the Northgate Mall, North Seattle. And what Nike would do is they would release all the colorways of their shoes, let's say on April 1st. And then on May 1st, they release the blackout edition, because they know everybody wants the all black version anyways. So you'd go buy your new shoe, and then the next one would come out and they'd be like, oh, I want that one too.
Did the shoe change?
No.
Yeah, the color. Exactly.
But the black looks cool and I like it. So
yeah, and that's what in our industry, which we are a spec industry. I mean, we're like this freak. I remember my old producer, Gene Herring, such a great guy. other than that, we were so politically, we used to have to drive everywhere together. Oh my, can you imagine me and Gene is like further left than all of you guys combined, right? And I'm so over here. Imagine us having to, we would drive from here to Arkansas together. And Gene smokes like 3 packs a day. And I'm in the car with him, you know, Mr. Health Boy. And it's like, oh my God. And we'd talk politics. Oh God. But Gene
just
used to have.
Just makes me think of our drive back from the hunt for 30 with Jerry.
Yeah, with Jerry, yeah. Who's more right than I am.
So, we got into it a little bit.
Oh God. But Gene used to say the same line. He had 2 lines. One was, catch a fish now. Kelly, catch a fish now. We need one now. But the other one was, he'd be talking, because he started out in general tackle. And he said, and then he went, he had a Fishing in the West with Larry. He did that. And then he started Fly Fish TV. And we would go all over, and he would get, we'd get at a sports show or something, and he would be there looking around, and he would always go, tiny industry, giant fucking ego. It's so true. We got more clothes for this industry than the bass world has.
Yeah.
Hell, now I'm watching all the bass guys in Sims. Whatever. What's wrong with Frog Tug? Rafco. But anyway, yeah, we beat that thing. We beat that child to death.
What happened?
We've got a dog moving lights around.
That's right. He must think I look better in that light.
All right.
I liked that one. That was fun.
Yeah, that was good. Great comment. Thank you, MC Bauer and President Doge Guy.
It reminded me of this guy when I was listening to that podcast this morning of the Muskie guys.
Yeah.
The Fly Roast, or whatever, Ultimate Fly Roast it was. I think it's on Muskie Fools, but I don't remember if they changed the name or something, because I've followed those guys forever. But one guy, I can't remember his name. It was the first one I ever listened to. And then I subscribed. Now I'm going to listen to all of them. It was hilarious. But one guy, I think there's two, he's got two personalities, I think. They call him Bam Bam and some, I can't remember what his other name is. And he's always, they have this Fly Roast. He's always like Milk Toast, evidently. I don't know. I'm just going off the comment, listening to him. And he goes, I'm coming out on this one. Everybody's telling me I'm being a pussy. This fly fucking sucks. That's all I can tell you. He's the shittiest fly ever seen. And I just started laughing. I go, I wonder if that's me on coffee. Oh, by the way, yesterday with Johnny.
Oh, God.
Holy shit. What was that shit he's drinking?
Extra Black Rifle's the Black 300 Rifle. Milligram Black Rifle.
I felt everybody, I told them we're driving. I haven't said a word in like 40 miles. And Johnny's just like, right? He's like, dude, it's like he just an eight ball. You're just like, what is with you? And I says, I had an epiphany. I said, this is what all those people that bitch about me talking all the time listen to. I go, I feel their pain. Oh my God. And he says, really? And he's just like, his eyes are like this. And he's just, he would check for like,
oh my God, he was
hours.
Bouncing around that front seat.
Unbelievable, getting the boat. He's like, what do I? He's like that. And then he kind of finally calms down about 12:30 or so.
Well, I love once we find
I felt your, all your pain that when you're saying, this guy ever shut up? And that's what I felt.
I love when we got to the river and he's like, one time got a 23 and a half out of there.
Yeah.
Ooh, that whole, I think somebody got like a 27 there back in 2021.
Every stat that ever happened on that thing. It was hilarious. So I
Johnny
apologize.
Has,
I know what you feel now.
Johnny has an incredible mind.
Nobody, the guy's forgot nothing in his life, ever.
Yeah, I tried to quote Office Space. I thought I had it down. And he goes, yeah, that's not how it is. And then he did, I don't know, a minute before, a minute after the whole way.
Two episodes.
And then he goes, and I just don't know why that stuff stays in my head.
Yeah.
Like I do.
Any movie, every stat, every river condition. He'll go back 20 years on a river condition. Remember in 2006? It's snow. I don't even remember that was a year. And, oh, remember we went fishing here and here? No, I don't remember that.
All right.
I won't remember yesterday in 2 days, so.
That's actually true. Yeah.
With my dating life, it's been pretty handy. Oh, we've already asked you. We were married. Oh, hi.
Oops.
You're pretty.
All right, so next question comes from Glenn Camblin. And Glenn starts this comment out. A little misinformation. He says, Braden is a genius. Glenn, let's go have some light beers. You'll change your opinion on that pretty quickly. Pinning Kelly down. Yeah, ask Kelly or anybody that knows me. Pinning Kelly down on a weekly pod is pure gold. I have questions. When Kelly and other people in the industry talk about only fishing a specific way or time of day, i.e. waiting for a hatch, Do you realize that this is only relatable to a small percentage of anglers? Most of us have limited days we have to fish, and thus we roll our eyes and think, cry me a river. So I actually think this is a great question from Glenn, and I want to kind of flip it around and ask other people, our listeners, to throw more questions at us from the eyes of kind of a beginner who may get your, you know, 9, 10, maybe 20 days on a river a year.
By the way, the average angler fishes 15 or less.
Yeah.
A year.
And that's average. We get lost in that, right? Mm-hmm. Because all of our fishing guides, all the shop staff are on the water.
Everybody goes 150 to 200.
And I remember when I was living in Seattle, driving 2 hours, you know, after work to go fish the yak for 2 hours, mm-hmm. you know, driving 4 hours round trip. And I remember watching a video you did over in that window about vests, packs, kind of the, you know, what you want.
Is that the one where I put the sling back upside down?
Yeah, you put the sling back on upside down, and then...
That was Johnny's fault.
You essentially said, like, well, when I'm going out and I don't know the bugs, I bring a vest so I can have all my bugs. Mm-hmm. If I'm just going out at night and I know it's hatching, I just bring this little thing. And I'm thinking to myself, going, well, shit, I fish, you know, I try to fish a lot, but I'm not tapped into that river. I don't know which bugs are happening when. I think the answer here is call a fly shop and they can help you out. A local fly shop, mm-hmm. and they can help you out with that. But what are other examples of things that we kind of lose being that we fish a lot that would be helpful to the, you know, more infrequent anglers?
I wasn't clear on his question when he said, I got to always give me shit about Crimea River because we get to fish a lot. And I could fall off my deck into the Madison River. So we're here. And we are, and I've always been this way all my life. I mean, in Michigan, it's even better. I mean, you can't go, I think it's 2.3 miles without touching water in that state. So I've always had that at our disposal and always been in the business. So it's always been part of it. But was he saying for those of us who...
Well, so he said, I have questions. It's not really a question besides, do you realize that that's only relatable to a small percentage of anglers?
I get that, but I don't know what is he asking that... We have the luxury of going to just the hatch and he's going to go fish.
Well, and that's where I think that it's not really a question. Mm. But I think that's why I want other people to write in and ask us about.
But what is the gist you think he's saying? Is he asking to the more relatable, like, what are we doing?
What I think he's getting at is he wants us to talk a little bit about the average angler who may not have all day to go sit on a river to wait for a hatch.
Oh, I copy.
So, you know, they're going to go out and they're going to fish no matter what's happening.
No, no. I totally dig this question because that's how we fished. And that is how really good anglers became really good anglers. And because it's changed a lot. And as much as I harp on the whole Euro thing. In the old days, you know, when I say that, I'm always talking about the 70s and 80s, right? And it was really imperative in those days that you, if you wanted to be in the little club, that you knew your hatches, mm-hmm. right? So before everything became so specific, right? And in particular, Euro nymphing, because it'll work all day. And, but we would go and you wouldn't necessarily, we did the same thing. We went and fished all day. I mean, not so much now. I don't do that. Well, some days if I had a day to just go fish, I would go and do exactly what I would have done 40 years ago. I would go and I would already know, just like today, we had guys in today and they were talking about, they're going to fish all day, but have no idea of the bugs and what was happening. And we're in betas world right now. I said, well, and so back then you would go and we didn't have, you really didn't even split shot was kind of on the edge of being new. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you'd have weighted nymphs and you would go and you would fish the emergence. So you would know that right now the spring betas are starting. We saw March Browns yesterday. We saw betas. Didn't see any squalas, even though that's what we fished all day. they ate it really well. But you would go and you would fish the hatch as you were, it's intended. You'd get there whatever time it is. You say, okay, it's 9 o'clock. Well, the bugs are just starting to move on. The water temperature is 39. Maybe it'll bump to 42 today. And we're going to have a little bit more advanced in our emergence. It's going to happen a little quicker later. And so you would start as close to bottom as you could. And again, really wasn't that. It was kind of taboo to put split shot on your leader. Mm-hmm. Some of us did it. I mean, I did, because I needed to be down there, right? But a lot of people, the European influence, there is no lead. That's why you have tungsten, which is heavier than lead, and it's okay for people to fish that, but you can't fish lead in Europe. What a crock of shit. I mean, you're still leading the fly, right? But you could lead your fly. You could build X turns of lead into your fly to get it to bottom. And so that's what we did. And then you followed that emergence, right? And so you learned it doesn't do you a lot of good to fish a dry fly on the surface, in particular in the spring, when there are no bugs on the surface, right? And you can bring a fish up every now and then, but they're down below, and that's going to emerge. They're going to emerge or pupate and come up through it. And so you followed that through.
More customers. We'll be right back. All right. Well, we had Bronson stop by the shop. Great chatting with him.
Fun.
We've now forgotten what we were talking about. So if it doesn't flow great,
for lunch.
Yeah. But we were talking about the question from Glenn Camblin, who's kind of talking about how most anglers don't actually get to fish as often as we do. So, you know, waiting for hatches is hard. I think what he's getting at is a lot of people go out and they fish whatever's happening.
Well, and that's how it is for everybody. I mean, so I said back in the day, we followed our hatches, but you don't always have that day. Very few people go for a day, right? Maybe you're on vacation, you take the whole day. But my suggestion would be, you don't get good at anything piecemealing your day together, you know? Like, I would go and say, I'm going to dedicate my day to learning to nymph or whatever. If you want to go, whatever it is you really think you're going to do. I mean, you can go with the anticipation of, you know, there's a hatch coming, or, you know, or maybe it's August and there are no hatches and you know you're going to just fish ants all day. But I would pick two styles maximum. To, you just don't get good just going, and maybe getting good isn't a point. Maybe
it might not be the goal for everyone.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just go out and fun and go out and, you know, cast some flies around and get better at presentation.
Detox from your job,
whatever that is.
Family.
You know? But if you, it doesn't always have to be just master everything, but that just how I always worked. I just wanted to figure stuff out. So, but if you were to go, I would tell you the first and foremost thing is to learn your read your water. Understand why your water is what it is, and figure out, and the only way to do that is to catch a fish out of it, right? But don't just catch the fish and walk away. Take a really hard look at your water. See where the hell a fish came from. And then I would say pick a couple. Now, if you drove out, like, we'll show up and we'll have our truck with us and we'll have different equipment. And so if you've got an all day, I would say go learn to nymph fish, because there's no sense if there's no fish up. Don't waste your time dry fly fishing. And that's what we did. You know, we would go and learn to nymph fish in the afternoon. You know, bugs are up, take the nymphs off and go start doing that. Or if you want to learn to streamer fish, just go, you know, afternoon, whatever, whenever there's no insect, whatever it is you're trying to do, but do it. But don't try to put everything into one, you know, one spot. I always had the luxury, if I wanted to go in the morning for the hatch, I could go in the morning for the hatch. I could just drive. It was always, rivers were always less than, most of my life, they weren't 2 minutes from me. And so, you know, maybe 15 would be a long run. And so I was always able to go do that. But I would say pick something. Pick, like, you know, I would go and just nymph fish all day. That's all day. And I would try to follow it and maybe, you know, do as much as I could to master that part. And if the bugs showed up, I'd always have my dry flies and I could switch over. But that's back kind of what we were talking before about the streamer rods and specific. we didn't have the diversity. You went fishing with one rod, one line, and then you had some different kinds of flies, right? And so you would just master what you could master with that.
So I'm thinking back to days, like I said earlier, where I used to drive out to the Yakima. I'm driving a long ways, and, you know, at the time, I had a lot going on, so Saturday was my day, right? So I wanted to go out and catch fish. I'd drive out there with a 9 foot six weight with a floating line and a bunch of nymphs, a bunch of dry flies, a couple streamers. And I'd always start off nymphing, you know, try to pick up a couple fish. And then if I saw a fish up, switch over to dry flies. And if nothing was happening at all, I'd try a streamer. Like, and I think
the redheaded stepchild.
Yeah. What I'm getting at is I think a really, a great setup if you're trying to do all of that is the 9 foot six weight with a floating line. And I really liked having a 7.5 foot, either 2 or 3X leader, probably 3X. Because if I wanted to fish dries, I could put a little bit of 4X off the end of it and fish it at about 9 feet, dry flies.
I remember running a leader for like a month straight.
Oh, yeah.
Things weren't as disposable. No. You know, you had your tippet, but I used to put my tippet back on my freaking spool. I would pull off so much tippet, you know, on my 7.5s or even if I'm running a 9, but I'd always, like, same thing, have a, you know, 3X tippet. And add tip, never, it didn't descend in the early days. You know, it's just like I put it on. And if I was done and I hadn't chopped it up, put that right back on the spool and cut it right at the freaking knot.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like, boom, I didn't waste nothing because it just didn't have the stuff. And not only that, it wasn't readily available. You didn't have a fly shop in every corner back then.
Right.
I mean, you know, or internet or any of that stuff. You had some Kaufman's. You could write into Kaufman's or... The fishing company, actually, when I was in my teens, was around. I got their catalog. But
nice.
Yeah, but the same thing. You just, but it's all what you want out of it. I mean, I was never, once I was in my mid-teens and maybe late teens, early 20s, I did not want to do, I wanted to master things. Mm-hmm. And so I would just go and do nothing but that. And I don't, hell or high water, hatches I'm throwing, you know, when streamers came out, when I first decided to write that book, it was, all my clients, everything, 2 years straight, they could do nothing, but if they fished with me, they had to fish streamers. If I fished, I had to fish streamers. And the only exception to that was hexes at night, and because it wasn't what I was shooting for. And so, but it's just what you want out of it. And go master something. It's like when we were talking this morning, it was Musky Fools, the guys I was talking about. And it's the ultimate fly roast. Watch it. It's so fun to watch those guys dissect their flies, why they're going to, they're roasting other people's flies.
Yeah.
And why it may work or may not work, you know. And they just did a spectacular job on this. But it kept made me think about Bramer. And Bramer showed up here. He was kind of a shitty tire. I mean,
it's Gunnar Bramer.
Gunnar Bramer, who's just such
an outstanding tire. Now.
Unreal. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable tire. But he wasn't. But it was from lack of discipline. He was trying to tie all flies or all everything. And I just gave him shit and said, Bramer, just go burn hair all night. Well, I didn't mean 12 hours. I think that's what he did. So I think he did 4 primos. Came back and he was better at spinning.
He was just like tying a head, cutting it off.
So I told him, you don't get to tie the whole damn fly. You just tie that thing and just leave me alone. And you think he went and he tied all night.
Yeah.
He walked in the next day better than I am. And I was like, holy shit. Well, he wanted to master stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he didn't matter what he was doing, and he did very quickly. And so, I mean, there's just two ways to look at it. Just go, if I was just going out to have a great day, fly fishing, and I would do exactly what you would do. I'd have some nymphs, I'd have some dries, and I'd have some streamers. And when appropriate, I would fish each individual. More importantly, though, than anything, like I said, learn that water. Learn to read your water. It doesn't do you a bit of good if you can't put the fly where the fish are.
Right.
And if you don't know where the fish are, that's the problem. And it'll just, but, you know, going out, you watch people on the river, they kind of, they're floundering, right? They're trying to do all things at once instead of just, if you break it for a couple hours, it's, you will get better at it, you know, just like you did. And that's about your desire. But if I only had, if that wasn't my deal and I just wanted to go defrag, I would probably just go throw dry flies because it's cool as shit. I mean, yesterday I was in heaven. I mean, it was just like, wow. You know, it's me and Johnny, you two. But I mean, it's like the old days with me and Johnny when a lot of this stuff was going on. And we just talking shit and fishing dry flies. There's nothing better. That's fly fishing. I mean, that is fly fishing, right? The rest of it's what we do. It's just bastardized gear fishing. But dry fly yes. fishing is in its purest form, right? And it's
well, I'd argue nothing. It wasn't the purest form. So you're throwing foam.
I know. I talked about it. I did switch over to a hair fly for a while.
Yeah.
Yes. But that would be, that would be my answer. I would say pick what you want to do or, you know, isolate something. Isolate, you know, anything it is you want to be, you know, and go out and do it. And don't worry about catching fish. I remember when Chet and I were fishing when we were teenagers. And if we got a handful of fish, we were really happy. Mm-hmm. You know, but we were just learning and learning, you know, as we went. There wasn't all this information. The sure shit wasn't podcasts and all this stuff. And so it was just a blast to go out. But when a fish tips his head up and takes it, it's pretty spectacular. That's and it doesn't really matter how big it is, right? And the thing about dry fly fishing is, when you're a really good dry fly angler and you have to have learned to read your water, so that helps. But when you learn to be a good dry fly angler, it means your presentation's probably pretty good. And that means the rest of them aren't going to be as difficult, right? They're not right. going to be as hard. And when you start throwing shit underwater, man, the wheels fall off that wagon in a hurry. You're the little rascals heading down that hill, right? And
yep.
Things are starting to go crazy. And so once you're pretty adept at laying the line on the water and seeing it come back and not dragging it unless you want it to drag, you know, and then when you start throwing things underwater, when you start nymphing, a little bit more control and it'll be easier. And so, but pick what you want to do.
Yeah. And I, you know, talking about yesterday, that fish that ate downstream,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I'm much newer to fly fishing than you and Johnny, and you guys are very seasoned anglers, been doing this for a long time, seen all sorts of crazy things. And it was still like a bolt of lightning went into that boat, that fish ate. Everybody's all jacked up. I mean, it was so cool. A lot of energy.
Flies dragging downstream, like, and it turns around.
Yeah, the fish ate it going downstream.
Way past the where we thought he was feeding.
Yeah.
I mean, he there's a perfect example. He liked that drag.
Yeah, because the first two, we've got it in. It was really cool. We're floating past this kind of rock wall. And, you know, Kelly's throwing dry flies down in front of the boat. And he'd fished this area. And we heard a big eat behind mm-hmm. us, which we assume it ate a squall or something that it really wanted on top. Because it was loud. It wasn't like a mayfly eat, right? And so Johnny rows back up. Kelly's throwing back upstream, and it's basically right out in front of me. I mean, the boat's 6 feet from where this fish ate. And the first two casts that came by, Kelly had really good drifts on. And then we're starting to float back down a little bit. The third one, Kelly's fly's dragging. It's got a full-on V-wake.
That
thing ate it going downstream.
I was trying to reposition it.
Yeah.
Because he'd already went past where I thought he was going to feed. And I was trying to drag it down to the next little...
The next little slick in there.
Slick, yeah. So I just kind of put tension on it.
It's the eternal is the same thing with that fish the guy spotted from the bank down there. Like you're in fast water mm-hmm. trying to throw upstream to slow water. It's just really, really hard.
You get like that much drag.
That's why dudes at Silver Creek throw downstream from a long ways
away. I always downfly if I can, downstream dry fly.
Yeah.
I just get a lot of control, but yeah, it was cool. That was a, I just think that the dry thing, which nobody would, I mean, most of my life, that's what we did. And right. then we just knew the other stuff's new, particularly nymph fishing. Streamer's not as new as that, but nymph fishing, wow, there's places where you get your ass kicked doing that. You know, I mean, I told you, Rusty Gates, he wouldn't sell one. He's on the Holy Water and the Osabo in Michigan, and they wouldn't sell nymphs. I mean,
sacrilegious.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
They had a couple streamers, but that was it. Yeah, times have changed.
So would there be any other advice for this person that's going out, you know, 7-10 days a year? The other thing that hit me, I was kind of talking about a little bit, but the ideal setup for someone fishing like that, I think it's that 9'6", depending on the water.
I would disagree with that. I prefer people to start in an 8.5-5 for trout, mostly because of what I just said. I think it's a better dry stick. If I had to have one, I'd absolutely have one rod. It's what I grew up with. It was a 9'6". Because you can throw a streamer. You can nymph fish it. You can throw dries just fine. But
I remember my first float out here with Hunter, I was fishing a 9'5" weight with a floating line with a 7'3" leader.
Yeah.
Because my streamer rod was banged up. It was in the hospital. And
the emergency.
I remember Hunter looking at me. He's like, why'd we hire you? And I was fishing just a terrible mini dungeon that I'd tied. And right below Lions, I mean, I lost a huge brown at the boat, probably 22, 23. And I lost another big rainbow at the boat. And I just remember being like, all right, well, this is cool. That worked.
Yeah.
And Hunter kind of had the same little like, whoa. Like, you can still fish streamers on floating lines. I mean, I was jerk stripping, but it's a setup that can work for a lot of stuff.
I probably, because I was from Michigan, that's probably why I'm sentimental to the 8.5-5. I think it's the most accurate casting rod also. I think your accuracy is, and any of you caster baiters that are going, you're out of your fucking mind. I'm talking about fishing, 20 feet around there, you know, with 2 foot of rod extension, plus an 8 foot rod, plus a 10 foot leader. You don't have to cast far, right? Accuracy is accuracy. And so and fishing accuracy is a hell of a lot different than hula hoop accuracy.
Right.
You know, everybody's got brass balls on the podium. It's easy. The fish isn't out there. I would love to have a competition where we had to have fish. The ring had to be to a fish that's moving like this, and he's only eating here and only one direction.
Yeah, only eating.
And your fly has to hit here. Watch that wheels fall off of that wagon.
Well, I mean, it's like, you can't simulate the adrenaline.
Yeah, that's
right?
My point. Yeah, that's my point. It's really like we said in the gym. A guy can hit a speed bag really well. He's a paper fucking lion. Mm-hmm. Now get in here and let somebody return fire. Things get a lot different the second. It's like, whoa,
yeah.
What is that?
I mean,
that's coming back and hitting me?
I love relating things to golf. And, you know, Rory just missed that putt on 18 at the Masters to win. He ended up winning in the playoff. But that's a 4.5-footer with an inch of break. On the putting green, he's going to make that 1,000 out of 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Easy.
When it's on the when something's on the line, it's the same thing, right? Throwing at the fish.
It's like I watched in my moment that I did golf that one summer. I was at all my buddies. Michigan has the highest number of golf courses in the U.S. And when we don't, Arizona beats us and they build 2 more. I mean, it's just stupid. I swear to God, it's a competition between these guys. And one of my best friends, Dougie Frazier, lived down the street. He's been a pro all his life. Jeff Kent, all these guys. I mean, but I knew a ton of these guys from Traverse City and they were all pros. And I watched one of them and I can't remember. He didn't live there. He was just there. And I happened to be up there for some reason. And this guy's chipping. And they're chipping at a tire. And they're not missing the freaking thing ever. And they got balls everywhere rolling around. And they're just like, tum, tum, boom, into this round, wasn't really a tire, but it looked like one. It wouldn't be out there. They wouldn't have some old tire out of it. But it was like this thing that they were chipping. I mean, some of it just didn't miss by this ever. I mean, they must hit their head on how many balls they threw out there. And they're just walking and chipping these things. Like, holy shit, take your eye out. And then you see at the Masters, some guy, I mean, I watched it too. I love watching. I like watching anything that people do something that freaking good at. Mm-hmm. I watched before the Masters, I was watching bowling.
Yeah.
And this guy, he threw one spare. It was like, oh shit.
And he's
dude,
probably pissed off about it too.
Yeah. And it was close time. Call, but who was going to win? And it was just like, oh man, this is great. But I mean, yeah, adrenaline's, I think the ultimate of this is when you get in the ring because you have to pay a price, right? You get your ass whooped. And when you see that everything was really cool before, and then all of a sudden you're there and it's like, whoa, you start forgetting things in a hurry when you're melons wobbling along.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, and in the fishing world, it's all so easy just to stand and pontificate and say, oh, just do that. And that's one of the calming effects of a guide frequently, if it's worth a guide worth a shit. Those jackasses that sit up there and scream at you, just fire them and, you know, don't go back. But you get a Johnny with you, you know, or a Scotty Hall or something like that, that's so calm. And it's all right. It's all right. He'll be fine. Don't worry about it. That's okay. Yeah, just relax. What are you going to, okay, just wait for a second. Let him get his head going back. And then, okay, now, good, perfect. And you know what? You can talk people off the cliff in a hurry. And then you get out by yourself. Well, that's not quite the same. It's a live grenade again.
It's just like, once again, back to golf, caddies.
Yeah.
A good caddy keeps you here mentally.
Yeah.
But then you put the club in their hands and they might shit the bed.
Then you're the caddy. But that's the same thing. I mean, so just where you're going to, what do you want to get out of it? The funny thing is when you live on the other side of the camera, like I've been doing TV for over 30 years. And you start to realize, I love when we go fishing and we have a guest with us who's a superstar and shit falls, goes wrong. And they'll always say the same thing. Oh, I never do that. Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
You do. You just don't have somebody filming you, right? And so it gets really, but the average Joe could give a shit about that. When you see a video, really, what do you see besides somebody catching the fish? Well, the guys are just out there filming, you know, doing their YouTube thing or whatever, and they aren't going to show you the shit.
They're not going to show the low lights.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, it's all.
I like to show some low lights, Kelly, just because it's fun.
It's real.
It's more realistic. Yeah.
It's real. Like when I had Fly Fish TV, when I was with Gene, our number one show ever, I never got a fish. Never even saw one. I mean, it was everything in the BC was blown out. We went to a river that was full of, I've told this story before, but we met this inebriated lumber engineer, drunk logger, hammered drunk, like, wow. But he drew us a map. He says, they're only here. They're only eating. It's the only river that's clear in the whole country. Pretty good map, really. Just a few things that weren't quite right. Like, he says, you can't miss it. You just get on this road and there's no turnoffs. Well, it forked like seven times. We took all six of the wrong ones. And we get there and he was right. It was clear, gin clear and packed full of steelhead. Except his idea of a steelhead, my idea of a chum were two different things. And I'm going to touch a fucking chum. I mean, I'm not touching those skanky things, right? And so I wouldn't even, I'd just like breaking them off. And it was our number one show. And that's all they could say was, it's great to see the pro get his ass kicked.
Yeah.
I agree. It was fun. I mean, but you never see. So what I'm getting at is when you're watching these videos and you're somebody who's only got 5 days and you're watching these people, they go out and they make everything look good. Well, yeah. They got makeup on too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's all bullshit. It's like, what about the 9 hours where it sucked? Right.
Oh yeah.
And I talk about bass a ton because it's the only real competition. And I don't know if it's still true, but a few years back, I watched, it was just the commentary at the Bassmaster at the Classic, I think. And they were running stats. And they said, for X years, the average tournament is won by 13 ounces. That's a 9-inch trout, right? But that's the difference between the absolute 300,000 and might have made 20 this week, right? That's a lot of didge. And that's the reality of this. you know, we don't show too much of the screw up. I mean, most of the guys that are that good aren't screwing up a lot.
Right.
But when you're by yourself and you're screwing up, you know, you never tally that in your brain.
Yeah.
The only thing you do are wins. Knockouts, not so many. Like, I was a bodybuilder for a long time. My stat, I had more contests than anybody in the U.S. at one time. At 41, I had 19 second places, right? I don't like to talk about them, but yeah. Billy brings them up constantly. Yeah. He goes, oh, is that one where you competed and you got second again?
First loser.
First loser. And it was like hilarious, right? But you don't count those. The only ones you remember, the three or four you win.
Right.
And it's the same thing in a day of...
Same thing, you know, people gambling, whatever, fishing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Eric told me, my buddy down there, he's a gambling machine, right? High roller. Spends $250,000 a year. And I said, what are you up? He said, oh, I'm down about 80,000 this year. I said, well, last year. Yeah, same thing. Next year. What are you up? 300. Only the win, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, he's the funniest guy, and he just loves it. But you don't dwell on the down. And from what I'm getting at is the guy who's watching or gal that's watching, you see somebody go out, and obviously they're going to show you all the right stuff. We don't concentrate enough on showing the wrong thing, like in golf, for example.
Right.
Or they'll describe, well, no, I don't know the term. He shanked it because it's, and then once in a while they'll say, sit, watch his grip. They'll throw it down. They say, I like Rory dropped his club in one of those, on like the ninth or something. I remember he came around, he dropped that club. And they were talking about.
Here comes the putter throw.
it was just one that he didn't do anything. He just stood there. But then they did a close-up on his hands, and they said, and it wasn't a good shot, and he hit whatever it's called. It hits the, I don't know anything about it. But they said all that, they showed everything he did wrong.
Well, and that's the difference, right, is he's not producing it, or his team.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's somebody else. They're showing his mistakes, yeah.
If every time I went fishing, I never caught a fish, or never did anything right, obviously you wouldn't. Want to know what
I do. Yeah, we could make a show.
Yeah.
Although I was going to mention when we were down on the Henry's Fork with Jake, you know, Jake's a great caster. You're mm-hmm. a great caster. Still probably maybe six times throughout a 7-hour day. Just an absolute pile job, right? Where that line comes in and that fly comes in behind it and low. And my favorite thing to do is go, I'm not going to mention how bad of a cast that was.
Oh, they hit it three times, I remember. I remember you said it to Jake.
I'm not going to point out how bad that cast was. Okay?
Jake was going to come back there and talk to you.
He's going to explain life to you.
Yeah, well, you just don't. I mean, there's also a point where you don't, your give a shit meter pegs out.
Right.
You know, and you can have a bad day. Now, if you're competition fishing, you wouldn't let that. I was thinking yesterday, in marginal water, I would cast, or, you know, first day fishing dries, it's kind of wandering around, 6 inches too short, whatever, they'll find it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, but you know you got 8 hours of film too, right? Well, we're not going to show that one.
Right.
And in the real world, that on a dry fly day, no bueno. That is, if you're worth a shit, but nobody can do it every time. You're going to have bad casts. I mean, I've fished with Tim and Steve, Ray Jeffs. They don't get better than that.
Right.
I've watched plenty of their casts go awry.
Yeah.
And not only just, I mean, you drop your line, you do shit, but you don't hit the A-reel with that. It doesn't hit the, it's not going to be on the TV. Although, when we do blooper reels, which we should, I mean, we should do what, they're hilarious. I mean, Bill Dance, number one profit zone in history was those blooper reels.
Yeah. Maybe we'll sell them on DVD too.
I think that first series was 6 million sold, something like that. I mean, they're hilarious.
No,
so we like both.
Yeah, no, they're good. I try to put a couple out every once in a while.
Long way around the barn.
I think last thing, and then I want to get into a different segment. I think it would be fun this summer, if we do end up building a casting pond, to set up some sort of challenge. Like, you can walk into the fly shop and, you know, if you can beat the challenge, then you get a half dozen free flies or something like that.
That'd be fun.
And make it, you know,
it's like the
50
guy
feet on a Frisbee or something that everybody says they can do.
The guy told me that he could, you know, out here, who I really like the guy, but tad arrogant. He said he could hit a Dixie cup at 65 feet every time. I said, give you $1,000 cash, right? I pull out of my pocket. I had a grand in my pocket. I said, I got a grand right here. Everyone, you back it. He says, I'll give you as many cash as you want. Says, you, every time you cast, it's a grand. So 65 feet. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's quite a hook.
That's
it's 3/4 of a fly line.
That's without any wind, without any fish, without Braden looking down your back going, oh, I'm not going to mention how bad that cast was. Not to mention how many thousand people are watching you. When we had Flyfish TV, I think we had 300,000 views to start every show. And it goes 5 times a day forever.
Yeah, we're not.
So we're not, you're bad. Well, it's network TV.
Right.
I mean, it's like everybody on earth watches your, that's why when I watch the golf or anything, you watch them and they, these guys got brass balls, man. I mean,
yeah, there's 6,000 people standing around the 18th green, but there's,
and they're
15
all screaming
million.
Shit. Yeah, there's 15 million people in every, and there's just, you know, pictures everywhere you go. And then there's that one asshole that every time the guy swings, he's in the hole.
Yeah. Mashed potatoes.
Donut face that guy. Just shut up.
So there's another fun.
He's on the tee, you idiot.
I can't remember which golfer it was, but they were talking about the 17th hole at Sawgrass in, which is a very famous par three, and the walk from the 16th green to the 17th hole, you have to go kind of around the lake. And it's like a 5-minute walk in front of the grandstands. They're interviewing a guy about it, his first time playing there in a tournament. And he goes, I thought I knew how to walk until I was there. You know, you forget how to move your arms and legs when there's that many people
everybody's
watching.
Everybody's looking
you.
At you.
Yeah.
Everybody's looking
just
at
funny.
You.
All right, let's do a new segment or another. It's a segment
different
we've done.
We've been running
into
this
it.
Thing for hours.
This one
yeah,
should be a fun one. It's called What's Kelly Been Pissed Off About Recently? And Kelly got a little upset yesterday, so why don't you tell us?
That's not really upset.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was a joke upset, but Johnny and I thought it was pretty funny.
Olives are the Antichrist food, and they shouldn't be in a freaking salad, and you should tell people if you're going to put a dog turd in your food. And I don't like when people put olives and shit, and especially on a chicken salad. There is no place for an olive on a chicken salad. And you don't put it under the freaking lettuce. Luckily, they didn't have a couple of them out there. And then the trash compactor just goes into my, Johnny's just pecking those things out of there. Because I won't touch son of bitches. Oh, God, they're disgusting.
My salad came out first. And I saw the olives. I go, uh-oh.
Yeah. The look on that girl's face.
What was her name? Jill? I can't remember her name now. You called her Lauren.
It wasn't Lauren.
Janelle. Thanks, yeah, Janelle.
She was great.
Probably not a watcher.
No, probably not. But yeah, that just pisses me off in general. Olives, just in general, piss me off.
Do you want to share the story of the trout hunter dinner?
No, it's just fat ass Steve Swanson, piece of shit friend of mine. He's like a homeless guy, right? He always showed up. He's been this like plague to me for 40 years. And it was Bill Devane and I and Swanee. And Swanee was in one of our shows. And
he was.
And Swanee, somehow this piece of shit, because we all went together. And nobody called. We went to Trout Hunter, which is my favorite restaurant up here. I don't know when he did it. That's the thing. I don't recall even going to the can or anything like that. And our dinner came out, and I seldom will eat a mashed potato anyway. I mean, I just don't eat that kind of food. But I was really hungry. I don't remember. I think we were in the South Fork or something. And somehow that sumbitch I would guess it was a full cup of olives. And they made this mound, and it was kind of, and I just took a scoop. I don't know why. Cause it probably been the only scoop I ate, but it was full of fucking olives. And it's not that I dislike them. I realize that they are the Antichrist food. And so therefore my body has it has an emotion, and it's called projectile vomit. And I spit those son of bitches out. And I mean, I don't care if the queen was sitting there. They're coming out without me knowing it. And the second that touched my mouth, I spit it right back onto it. Unfortunately, it didn't hit Swanee. It hit the plate, my plate, and the whole world's laughing. Entire staff is watching. Everybody's watching. Somehow they all got hip to it. prick. It's all right. Maybe I'll show him riding my horse. You want to see something hilarious? Jesus, about your double horn gripper. But anyway, yeah, that was, that doesn't piss me off. I just know. For those of you who, I was married to an Italian chick once who would sit and eat olives and jalapenos, popping them like that. Oof. That's why she's my ex. Well, that and a couple guys, but fun stuff. I can't blame them for that, though. Eating an olive, you can blame somebody. Getting some strange, not so much.
See, I like olives, so Kelly and I don't agree on this one.
That's right. There's someone. So, yeah, that's what's pissing me off.
Yeah, hopefully our listeners who are driving didn't veer off the road there. That one had me cracking up. So, all right, well, maybe that's a good place to end this show.
We can't. We got to do our two other things.
What are two other things?
Music.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. That's my bad. Band of the week. What do we got?
SVR. Can't believe I missed it last time.
What's that stand for? Stevie.
There you go.
Ray Vaughan.
There you go.
I'm dyslexic. Yes. Yeah, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Oh, I'm going to go. Did I do Dire Straits yet?
No.
Dire Straits. Mark Knopfler.
Well, he's pretty good. He ain't no SVR, but he's pretty good.
No, he's.
He's right up there.
He's pretty good. Yeah. And then you want to show off something behind the desk? Or is there another segment you were thinking?
Well, you had to do that rapid fire thing.
Oh, yeah. We're not going to have time in today's episode.
We can do
that.
One. Do one. I'll do it with my back turned while I'm looking for something. Something unique. Okay. I like this. This is a mummified. Up above, there's the Shave Merkin Award. I don't know if you can see it up there.
I'll get a photo of that. People love when I do this.
Yeah, the Shave Merkin Award that the East Rosebud, Richie, sent me. And ironically, down here, that's the Shaved Merkin, but that's the dead whitefish thing. I found this in my fireplace. It's a mummified, it's kind of cool, mummified whitey. When Johnny whitey. And I used to be a huge fireplace in here, and we tore it, and we had to jackhammer that thing down. And in the flue was that whitey. He's completely mummified. He's hollow. Everything, and it looks like he's got this, his face is, this is just because the whole end of the head's gone, but that's pretty cool. Everybody should have a mummified whitey.
Okay, then let's do our under fire segment. I've got another question.
One question.
One question.
One question.
From, we used one from him in the first one, Sam? But it was actually Johnny's question.
Oh.
So now we've got one from Sam.
Talk about my, the other Swanee. Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't actually have it in front of me. He DM'd me on Instagram, and he said, let me see if I can pull it up.
I thought he was the one that asked I'd prefer about to be drowning the guy on the river.
Yeah, he did.
Which but, I didn't drown.
But that was actually Johnny's question.
I didn't even really hold him under.
Let's much. See. Much. Sent this to me while I was on a golf trip. And
you're always
was,
on a golf trip.
I was on a golf
That's
trip last
pissing
week.
Me off. You get to go do everything.
I was drunk. I was having fun. So he said, you and I both like to fish on foot. I think when you're fishing on foot, you should be the only one to land your fish. That's a rule. Oh, please don't use my name if you talk about this. We'll edit that out. I'll bleep his name out. That. Yeah. We'll bleep. Beep, beep, beep.
I have a little bit of an opinion on that one. I agree with him. Most of my life as a guide, it's in particular your steelhead and salmon guide, right? But you can't really say that because you get elderly people, you get all kinds of people that in this river, oh man. But I think I know where he's going with it, but I agree because I had to chase fish, 50, 100 yards downstream to land. It's just not going to get done otherwise, right? Because my clients couldn't chase them. But on a normal thing, yeah, I kind of agree with that. You should be able to, what that's saying is you should be good enough to land your fish.
Yeah.
And most people tip fight their fish and don't know how to put the stick to them. And they let them do things and they look for their escape route and blah, blah, blah. and you should be able to land your own fish, and you really should be able to do it in less than 30 seconds. And I don't care how big it is. You should have it in control at least.
Unless it's like a steelhead or something. If we're talking trout, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and even a trout, if it's a giant, you should have it in controllable zones, because once you hit that minute, you start getting...
And we're talking a real minute, not a... Yeah, oh, I fought that fish for 10 minutes.
Yeah, that fish was dead anyway. You should have just rolled over. But that you should have complete control of a fish in 30 seconds.
I disagree. I don't think this needs to be a rule. I do think you should be able to net your own fish.
No, that's what I was getting at. Yeah. I don't let people net my fish.
You were real pissed you got at me when I jumped out of the boat in Chile. I
will not.
I thought you handed me the net to go net it. I was confused.
Hit you with the freaking net. Yeah, I do not.
I landed it and you looked at me and you're like, what was that?
Yeah, it's like bush league, man. I mean, you should be able to get to it. And we've talked about fighting fish before. Don't look for your exit strategy. Stand your ground, fight your fish. Get control. Understand what mean control means and how you get it by angle of your rod and stuff. But, you know, in a boat, obviously, I mean, I fish alone a lot, so I have to.
Yeah.
But I would much prefer somebody net my fish in the boats, because you're just messing around and that's more time the fish isn't put back and all that stuff. But on foot, it's just kind of bush league, because people tend to stand there then. And I get what he's saying. It's just not like you see people here, because this thing's so fast. I gotta be 30 yards below the guy, and they'll be swatting at the fish like it's a fucking bug.
So that's the caveat I would say is, if you're gonna have someone else net your fish, understand that the same principles of netting your own fish apply, and that the best way to land a fish with two people is have the other person be about a rod length away from you, no further. Because then you have your same angles, same control of your fish. You've got no control or ability to lift the head as soon as that fish is more than a rod length away, right?
And
close together. That's the important
thing. I'm sure that's what he's talking about.
No, I'm sure that's what
and
he's
talking about. And you see it, or you'll see him downstream kicking at the fish or flapping it up on the bank or some shit.
Yeah.
The fish is just not that important. Don't boot the fish. I have a picture. Oh, that was, we were talking about the segment's over. We made it. We're talking about when the musky guys roasted me about the 100-incher, but it's not physically possible. I have a book that has a 99 in it, and it's the unofficial world record. I was over at lunch trying to find it, right? But I forget what I was going to go on that. I just remember that. But the giant fish thing, when they got it on and they say they fought it for 10 minutes and all that kind of stuff, which is not really very true. It's usually here in the shop, you hear 30 to 40 minutes frequently. But, and you watch a guy with a 60-inch, 50-inch musky, and he'll land the fish in 15 seconds, you know, or less.
Right.
If he figure-eighted it, he might not make it 5 seconds.
Yeah, right? Scoop it immediately.
Yeah, it's just there. But when you watch people do that with these, they'll get a giant fish on, then they tend to freeze up a little bit. And man, that's just a good way to kill your fish. You just got to get to your fish, whatever it takes. But I forget what I was going to say when I was thinking about the musky guys roasting me, which I thought was hilarious. And it was musky fool, and it was that thing. So we already figured that out. But had something to do with that.
Well, let's bring the next episode.
I think it was the fact that how fast a guy with a... I mean, that's a fish that as big as you are.
Yeah,
right?
Huge.
And and they get control of their fish so quick. And just remember that the longer, like Dougie Pauline's theory, after 60 seconds, exponential loss happens every 7 seconds or something. Because it's just like the chance.
Go watch Bassmaster.
Yeah.
Those guys reef on their fish. I mean, they're lunging over the boat to lip them, you know?
Yeah, it's got to go.
But. All right, thanks for watching. Go buy stuff online, slidein.com.
Thanks for watching.
See you next week.
Hope you liked it.